management. Good morning.
Morning.
Shall we start? I think that we all have the copy of the agenda of the meeting. Do we all have? Yes. In terms of the agenda, we are now on item number one, which is opening and welcome. Shall we close our eyes and observe a moment of silence for prayer and meditation? Amen. Well, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen, I wish to take this moment and welcome all of you to this very, very important meeting. It is a meeting where we will be briefed by the researchers on the fourth quarter expenditure report 2015/16 and also the third quarter expenditure report for 2016/17. Well, I am also informed that we will also be briefed or given an analysis on state-owned entities, which is what we asked in the previous meeting, so that we familiarize ourselves with what is happening there and identify areas of intervention. Now, in terms of the expenditure analysis, the committee has already received a briefing from the National Treasury, and the research team will present a brief on key issues emanating from the expenditure report that the committee has received. Honourable members should be able to link the input we received today together with the last week's comprehensive briefing from the researchers that we received on the 20 priority departments. And we all left this place happy because indeed, we felt so informed and so empowered. Therefore, this information will supplement the Bible that the committee has already received. Another very, very important briefing that we will receive today is an analysis on state-owned enterprises. And you can see these days, there's a lot of noise on the state-owned enterprises. And I think timeliness will be key for us to intervene where we think we need to intervene. Timeliness is not what I'm saying, it is also prescribed by the Constitution. Accurate information and timeliness in our intervention. So we all know that the LOE environment is an area where the government is key stakeholder and in some instances sole shareholder should be able to drive the country's national strategic economic agenda. We also know that several nations across the world have grown their economies through the effective performance management and appropriate governance of SOEs. Of course, we also note that SOEs are not regarded as a panacea for solving the challenge of South Africa, but are really an added strategic and catalytic state instrument for radical transformation, for growth, for development, for service delivery and employment creation. They can make a significant contribution towards attainment of the development objectives of the National Development Plan and the MTSF. The medium-term strategic framework. The briefing will touch on key issues of governance and performance issues confronting our state enterprises, and we should engage on ways in which some of these issues can be addressed going forward. And this committee is key in ensuring that where we need to unlock, we come into the state and unlock so that indeed, at the end of the day, we can benefit in terms of our economic growth. Because in the main, we are about economic growth, poverty reduction, and when you talk economic growth, so I think actually automate can touch on the employment creation, and then this is going to promote equality. Thank you very much for listening to my welcoming remarks. We will then move straight to apologies. Secretary, have we received any apologies?
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. We only have one apology today from Dr. Speak, who indicated that he will be arriving late because he is attending another meeting.
Thank you very much. The apology is noted. We'll then move straight to our presenters, who will then present to committee on the fourth quarter expenditure report and the third quarter expenditure report. Over to you. I'm sure you've arranged yourself on. Okay, please, I'm sorry, there's a hand.
Honorable
members,
Shoka Sole. Thank you, Chairperson. One, I would, if it is possible to have the colored one on the date on Instagram, I would appreciate it because of my website. And two, if you could copy us your speech today, because it summarizes everything in a nutshell. It was very good, Chairperson.
I'll request the Secretariat to circulate my opening remarks, and then is it possible for everybody to get a current presentation, because it does help. Thank you very much. We are ready. We are in your hands. Over to you.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues and guests. Maybe by way of introduction, my name is Musa Ramisa, a researcher to this committee, and I'm accompanied by my colleague, Helena Nishama. In terms of the focus of the presentation, as the Honorable Shokesikol has mentioned, I think health happiness has been a very good and succinct view of what the presentation is about. So I don't think I have to tell on that one. Maybe suffice to say that I agree with the capacity that this is a timely discussion, because it's a discussion that is happening at different levels, you know, whether within and outside of government. And over and above that, it is a brilliant discussion given the strategic role of SOEs in the developmental agenda of government. So I think the request by the committee was a timely one, and it was a brilliant one. Well, in terms of the nature of the presentation or the flow of the presentation, we basically, the straightforward presentation, we've got three broad sections. The first section, by way of the dashboard, will be looking at the track record of audit opinion, the type of audit opinion that is received by each of these state-owned entities that we selected. And then after that, we'll have another dashboard looking at expenditure management. There I'm talking of issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, unauthorized expenditure, as well as irregular expenditure. And then the third section will then zoom into the issues regarding each and every one of these state institutions, whether it's issues of governance. But that part of the sector of the presentation is twofold. The first section just gives members an overview of the role that is played by the state-owned enterprises, whether the mandate of the entity as well as the strategic role of the entity in the developmental agenda of government. And then the other subsection was looking at the challenges that are faced by these state-owned enterprises. So we primarily use the annual reports of each and every one of these state-owned enterprises. But in terms of the issues, we try to look at the latest audited information. So we look primarily in 2014-15, but we also made remarks where these issues are recurring. And then over and above that, in terms of the dashboard, we use this consolidated, I don't know, I can't see the front page, but the consolidated audit report, which is published by the Auditor General. So it gives you the audit opinion of public entity as well as the expenditure management information. The reason why we use this document from the AG is that sometimes we find that information that we get from the AG and information that we get from the annual report is not the same. Sometimes ATM departments disagree on certain issues, maybe how much irregular expenditure was incurred, but the AG will go on and say, but this was found, and then we are publishing this information. And as well as the AG is the right institution for Parliament to rely on it, because when it comes to body finding, that is the legislative institution. So maybe just to talk about the number of entities that we selected, we have cross entities that we selected. We tried to mix and match, but primarily we looked at Schedule 2 public entities. Those are major SOEs in terms of the SMA. You know, they've got a very strategic role in the agenda of government, and sometimes they have the power to generate their own revenue. But we also tried to select also Section 3 entities like SOSASA and others. So I will just focus on the first section, which is the dashboard on the type of audit opinion, the straightforward one, and then my colleague will focus on the second one, and then we'll move into the main issues. Oh, maybe just to give a list, the first one is PRASA, Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa. The second one is the
SASA.
Yes?
Okay.
Yes, PRASA. Yes. But the list is not an issue. But we have PRASA, and then we've got the South African Post Office, we've got the South African Airways, we've got South African Express, we've got SAPC, we have the Independent Development Trust, IDT, we've got the Compensation Fund, we've got the Central Energy Fund, we've got the National Development Agency, we've got the South African Social Security Agency, SASA, and then we've got Broadband Infrastructure, and then we've got Shelter Employment Factory. In terms of the dashboard, here I think we are following the same pattern that we used last week. So where institutions got an unqualified audit with finding, we shaded it with yellow. Where they got a disclaimer, it's red. Where they will get, for instance, the claim audit very close to green. So SASA, Broadband Infrastructure, EF, NDA, their latest audit opinion, up until SAPC, they got qualified with findings. And most of them, especially PRASA, Broadband Infrastructure, EF, NDA, they've been receiving this type of audit opinion since 2011-12, so there has been no improvement, and they have not addressed the problem. So they are stagnating. Maybe the difference with SASA, because in 2011-12 they got a clean audit and then they failed to improve the output. But the ones that have most, we had this problem last time because the projector, you don't see the difference between orange and yellow. Actually, from office up until FADC, that is orange. Those are qualified audit opinions with findings, which are not very good. So the other ones, those are unqualified. But the best ones, IDC, the very best ones, IDC, the Compensation Fund, as well as SASA, because they received not SASA, SAA. The IDC and Compensation Fund received a disclaimer. But the problem with SAA, we decided to put yellow there. We had disagreement whether we must say this at all, because the annual report was not submitted, the financial statements were not submitted. I think members are aware of the issue surrounding SAA, the issue of Hong Kong threatening to ground SAA because of the financial statements. So those are the issues there. I think Kellyland will then take on the issues of expenditure management.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and colleagues. In making up the audit opinion with the expenditure management, we look at the expenditure, the regular expenditure unauthorized for the FMA expenditure dashboard. This is the next slide. We had this slide, very good slide, in our presentation last week when we were presenting department. And we have picked up some common trends between entities and departments as well. Suffice to say that with regard to entities, there are patterns that are beginning to emerge. For instance, if you look at CASA, you can see the red is actually a pattern from 2011-2012 to 2014-15. And the red depicts the any amount of irregular that is above a middle rent. We also see FAA is also a finding a pattern as well from 2011-2012-2014. And these patterns are unbroken patterns in terms of irregular expenditure. The fifth, which is essential in a department as well, is the same pattern. The express, the same pattern. FDC, the same pattern. At least in some entities, it's a pattern, but it's a broken pattern, meaning that in some in other years, they do not experience as high irregular as the rest of the other entities. SAPA as well has also experienced the pattern of irregular. That is why we have seen the audit opinion, the type of audit opinion that we've seen on the first slide, where even if they get unqualified, they get unqualified audit with findings, because these are issues that are raised in the question. So if you tell the person there's a link between the slide and the slide before this one in terms of the audit opinion that the methods and funding, which is your director. You realize that SAFA is one of the entities that is very strategic in terms of the budget, because it receives the biggest chunk of the population through the development of the budget. The green color for information, it depicts the clean area, where you find that when it comes to unauthorized expenditure, there is no amount in cash, so we deem that as clean. And even with the department in the presentation we did last week, it was the same rate. So what we are picking up is that department entities have clearly managed to cap on unauthorized expenditure. Meanwhile, they are unable to cap the irregular expenditure, as well as the wasteful and fruitless, which is depicted in terms of yellow color. And so we're saying that if then departments and agencies are able to stop or eradicate or prevent the unauthorized, the question is why would they not be able to prevent the irregular and the wasteful? That's the simple question we're asking. Because it has been very, very, very consistent green colors in unauthorized areas. And this area here is addressed by one of the same provision, which is Section 8 of the Civil Law. And if we are able to develop systems that ought to address that provision, you must also strike a balance in terms of irregular, unauthorized, and as well as useful. And I will ask my colleague to proceed with the rest of the session. Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Well, the first entity that we will review in terms of the strategic role as well as the challenges.
Okay.
Sorry, on the slide before, which is the regular, we actually forgot to mention that the entities, some of the entities have actually submitted their annual financial statement date. The FMA prescribes sequence of submission of annual financial statements and treasury as well as for auditing. And therefore, you see, when it comes to FAA, it has not submitted annual report at all. That's what my group was saying. But prior to that, for the rest of the two financial years, those statements submitted late. So, in a nutshell, they were not audited by the AG because of the non-compliance with the FMA, which surprised the actual sequence of submitting. They would appoint their own auditor that will actually go through their financial statement so that they can tell the report in Parliament. But I'm saying that in structure is a gray area of non-compliance with the PFMA. And broadband as well, this year did not also comply with the FMA in terms of submitting annual financial statements on time. for the OTF. That's why then you see that they submission as a note in each entity. FAF says the same thing. There's a trend, in fact, from 2011 up to 2014. This financial and financial statement has not been submitted on time for all the purposes. Thank you very much for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, now, focusing or zooming into the Independent Development Trust, Okay, maybe just to bring this institution to the attention of the committee. By all means, this is a very strategic institution in the developmental agenda of government. It reports under the Department of Public Works. It is a Schedule 2 public entity with about 26 years of existence, as it was established in 1990. Why do I say it is strategic? It's because it is responsible for delivering social infrastructure and social development program management services on behalf of government. But it is an implementing agent. So more often than not, when we hear that public works is responsible for building this and that, primarily this institution, this implementing agency. I think members will remember that it's one of the implementing agencies that is responsible for the building of new schools in the Eastern Cape as part of replacing the MAT schools. It's a very strategic. So in terms of building of schools, building of clinics, building of hospitals, it's very, very strategic. So when we look at the national infrastructure plan of government, this institution is very key. When you look at the NHI, because the NHI at this point is really about putting infrastructure in place, this institution is very, very key. When you look at rural development, the replacement of mass schools in the Eastern Cape, this institution is very, very key. So even in terms of job creation, because infrastructure is labor intensive, so there's job creation expected, the skills development expected. And the issue of infrastructure is an immediate goal or agenda of government, but also it is central to the national development plan, which at this point, that is the ultimate focus of government. So in those ways, I think whenever this institution is discussed, the members must look at it in that spirit. But having spoken about the strategic role of this institution, maybe we can look at some of the challenges that the institution is facing. I can say the reason why I started with this is because it has very, very big challenges. It's one of the institutions that is facing major, major challenges. As we have seen in terms of the type of audit opinion, is the latest one is a disclaimer. This is the best audit opinion you can get. Earlier and yesterday had received a qualified, which is a step closer, you know, to the worst one, you know, after the other one. So, in that respect, things are not happening. But the biggest issue is the financial and operational sustainability of the institution. The institution is facing financial problems. As a result, it is facing operational challenges. For instance, you know, maybe some of the symptoms when you look at human resource or the vacancy rate in the institution. As of the end of 2014-15, when they reported to the AG, they had the 91 vacant positions, which is 21% in the institution. And there was an increase from 67 in 2013-14 to 91, so there is no improvement. But what is left is that 40% of those vacant positions are in the office of the CEO. So if that is the case, then you wonder how the institution is operating, because the office of the CEO you will expect to be the head. And then in the corporate service unit, it experienced by the end of 2014-15, 28% vacancy. In the financial service unit, 22%. In the development service unit, 18%. But the biggest problem is the high turnover of specialists and professionals. But you know, the institution operates in the built environment, the construction sector, those skills are very scarce, but they are very critical. But the institution is needing those skills. Why? Because of financial challenges, operational challenges. So the staff is not certain about their future. As a result, they are resigning in numbers. Sometimes contracts are not renewed. We can even assume that it's because of, you know, when they don't have finances to pay people any longer, you know, you end up not renewing their contract. For instance, just to bring this to the attention of the committee, when we speak of high turnover specialists and professionals, we speak of program managers, program implementation managers, program administrators, and then other professionals like legal advisors, personal assistants, and such. And the institution also admits that their biggest challenge is the loss of experience personnel in the sales environment because they are losing institutional memory. And if they are losing this skills, how does then the institution expected to serve its client department? As a result, we've read that departments are not keen to use the ICT in terms of building infrastructure, operational projects. You know, for instance, the Department of Education will not be keen to use ICT now to schools in the Eastern Cape because they know the capacity is not there, that is challenging. Because you will, for instance, when we spoke about the Department of Education in the previous discussion with the National Trainer, there's a problem in terms of the athletic program. Athletic program is not accelerating at the pace in which it was expected. Why? Because implementing agencies are failing. So the failure will be seen to reside with the Department of Basic Education, whereas it is this institution that are not doing what they are supposed to do. Why? Because of the challenges that they are facing. So over and above that, what are the other issues that are raised by the AG? There is quite a bucket list of these issues, so I will not go through these one by one, but procurement, that is, it's cut across, you know, across departments, across state owned enterprises, the issue of procurement. So you will see here, I raise an issue, and then under it, I then put the provision or the act that was not complied with, or that was contravened. For instance, the first one on procurement is the failure for competitive bidding and bidding not as a type for a minimum period as described in the supply chain management policy. And then what was contravened there is section 51 subsection 1A, Roman figure 3 of the PFMA. Maybe let's just say section 51 of the PFMA. The other one, contracts awarded to bidders based on preference points that were not calculated in accordance with the requirements of the preferential procurement policy framework acts and regulations. And then the third one is the issue of someone participating in a contract despite having conflict of interest in terms of the business interest or private interest. And there's contravening of section 50 of the PFMC. And the SD went on to also mention that the ICT also, ICT has insufficient insufficient appropriate audit evidence to prove that all contracts were awarded in accordance with the legislative requirement. So when they asked, how did you award contracts, they could not prove because they did not have a proper or an accurate contract register. So those are the challenges that are faced by this. And then other issues are issues of expenditure management. You can even look at this one as an issue of leadership when it is said that irregular expenditure, excess expenditure was incurred as a result of the accounting authority's failure to prevent this from happening. So you can expenditure management, but also it's an issue of leadership. I think we cast this length in our previous presentation. And then the issue of consequence management, where appropriate disciplinary steps were not taken against officials incurred due to regular expenditures, business and regular expenditures. Again, they are contraventions that happened here, primarily section 51 of the public management, of the public management. I think with this,
have I listed these acts that are and regulations that are conducted? I think at the end of the presentation, members can even formulate a conclusion that all these are the main legislative frameworks and provisions that are contravened by institutions. So now when we invite departments, our focus should be why is it that institutions are contravening these provisions and these regulations and nothing happens? I think the land spoke at length about it, so I'm not going to detail. So the issue of leadership again comes up, as well as the issue, I think it's the issue that Honorable Shoppers will always emphasize, the issue of record keeping. Even if institutions don't keep records, whether weekly, a monthly, daily, I mean, how do you then account? How do you hold people accountable? How do you know who did what and when? So that issue is very important. And then the issue of investigation, various investigations, ongoing, not analyzed, others are done internally, others by external service providers. What is it? SIU. Yeah. But the biggest issue here, I don't know what this is set up for, but in 2015, the CEO of the IDC was suspended, and the Labour Committee, if the institution is invited, would like to know what the status quo in that regard. Have you replaced? Have you recovered? If there was any money that has to recover. But those are the issues that are faced by this institution. But as I said, and I will repeat, it's a very, very strategic institution, but it's got challenges. And a lot of focus must be put into this one. And then the next one, also facing big challenges, the compensation fund. The compensation fund which accounts to the Department of Labor. The role of this one is very, very key in the agenda of government of providing decent work, because it ensures that people who have injuries or who die in the workplace are taken care of. So the mandate is to provide sustaining compensation for occupational injuries and disease, rehabilitation and reintegration services. So if you have a problem in the workplace, you must be taken care of. If possible, you must again be reintegrated into the workspace. You know, those are the conditions that define what decent work is, because it's an end of life. But if you don't have the medical aid, if you have an indirect work and then nothing happens or you have to pop out of your pocket, then that type of job cannot be said to be decent. So this is a short and long-term priority in government. As you know, the five priorities of government, that's one, decent jobs, providing decent jobs. No longer the issue of providing jobs, but decent jobs. But again, as I mentioned earlier, there are challenges. The first one, in 2014, as I mentioned earlier, is received the disclaimer, but the device is where, because in the case since 2013, so if we success is there's no improvement. Financial sustainability is also a problem because they incurred a material loss to the amount of 4.7 million as of 2014-15, and part of that is 3.3 million that was incurred in 2013-14. And according to the report from the HG, this was due to criminal misconduct. So you will expect that there are investigations. Maybe the question is how far these investigations have some of these investigations been concluded, any money recovered, and so on and so forth. And then, again, maybe the story that I need to tell here, when you read different documents in the media and the reports of the AG, you get a story that the issue resources here such that the budget the institution is unable to pay service providers on time. And this is very critical because if someone is injured, you take him to a particular GP or particular hospital. And if you are unable, if this institution is unable then to pay on time, then these hospitals will not begin to admit people who are injured as well, and that they can to them through the compensation fund.
So that's a crazy problem. I think I read about it because when you do this research, you try to follow, you know, the issue at length. So this is a big problem, and it's called an issue because if you are injured as well, the least you want, you know, the last thing you want is to be in hospital and before the little bills are not paid. You know, you can imagine, it makes your situation worse, you know. So this is a big problem. And then, as I mentioned earlier, issues of procurement. You know, the people that are here, we try to highlight those that we are glaring because sometimes the list is too long, you know. But procurement is that good support, the good of the value that's about half a million procured without inviting competitive bid. And that's a violation of trade regulation 16A 6.1. And then after that is the expenditure management. I say it's also an issue of leadership. It's an issue that cuts across where the accounting authority has not taken steps to prevent irregular expenditure. And then it's revenue management. This is very important because, as I mentioned earlier, some of these efforts, if they receive, they generate revenue through different means. But you find that they've got problems, you know. Sometimes they issue loans, but they don't have systems in place to track those loans and recover those loans. When they do receive the money that is owed to them, interest is not charged. So that is not good because it speaks to the sustainability of the entity. For instance, in this case, it is said that effective and appropriate steps are taken to collect all money due to the fund. And that is in violation of Section 51 of the CMA and Treasury Regulations. And then it is also mentioned that interest was not charged on all areas accounts as required by Section 86 of Section 2 of the Commerce CoIDA. I can't recall, I'll have to check and then get back to the member what exactly it means, but it's a violation of that framework. And then after that is the issue of liability management. I think it's more or less the same here. It is that the compensation fund issued the loan service provider without the approval of the Minister of Finance or an official authorized by the Minister. You know, went through the discussions, because it was discussed in the meeting of COPA when they were discussing the similar issues. Here there was a disagreement, in fact I think even with the AG about these loans, because the institution was saying, you know, these were not loans, these were advances. And the AG said, no, these were loans. But the bottom line is that they were issued without approval of the minister, or an official that is authorized by the minister in violation of the AFMA. And it is these loans where the institution could not charge interest. So this is a problem because those are really extreme, you know. And then, issue of leadership, I mean, I think that is the crux of the matter here. That is the main problem. I mean, in this institution, the issue basically is leadership. The accounting authority did not take action against the commissioner for the raising of the audit outcome. As a result, the commissioner did not take action against the officials who are responsible for ensuring that all opinion of the institution is clean. So it boils down to the issue of consequence management. Because if consequences are not taken at all, you know, it goes down, 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 and no one really, you know. And then the institution will find itself in a position where this one finds itself. Again, lack of leadership and adequate sound management with financial and performance management skills and competency. So it's having the right people with the right set of skills. So here, that is the problem. At what level, we do not know. Maybe when the institution is invited, when it's invited to the end, we can say, where do you have problems? Because clearly, the agency says we've got a problem with skills among the people that are leading the institution. So where are the problems? What sort of skills do you lack? what measures are you putting in place? You know, what are the challenges I face? You know, those types of questions. And then management has not implemented the process to manage poor performance, resulting in extensive use of consultants in the areas of finance, claim processing, and debt collection. This, again, I think the committee must highlight this one. It's a big problem. Well, of course, people who are employed do certain things, but because they cannot do it, maybe because they lack the requisite skills, or they just, you know, they don't feel pressure. And then the institution is left with, I don't know, maybe left with no option but to go and hire consultants. So it's our day now. The people who are here, they are supposed to do the job, they are not doing, but they are getting paid, and then they are also prepared to hire consultants. So to me, it also amounts to fruitless expenditure. It is wasteful, because the money are going out to consultants is not supposed to be paid. The only thing we need to focus, if those skills, those people lack certain skills, skill them, you know, or else find the right people and so on and so forth. So again, around the issue of governance, you know, leadership and governance, inadequate risk management processes due to delays in the approval of the new risk management unit. You are likely to have a lot of problems if you don't have a functional risk management unit. And also, lack of improvement despite numerous interventions by the audit committee and the internal audit unit. So they raised the issues, but those issues were not taken up. I think they will talk about this. You know, you can highlight the risk and submit, but it depends what happens afterwards. And then, in terms of investigation, yeah, there are lots of investigations that made in the issue of criminal conduct, money lost, you know. So there is a backlog, there was a backlog of 42 unresolved cases. So maybe the status quo has happened to date, and then there was a suspension of the CEO in 2015. So what is the status quo up to this point? And the next institution in the city.
I just want to discuss with the honorable member.
Yes.
Are you okay so far? Or do you want us to engage in a discussion? And then we then proceed again. So we are here to
And then the next one is the South African Post Office. I don't think I need to go into detail on this one, because I think the issue is out there in the public domain, and the institution, I'm told, is currently busy with its turnaround strategy, but you know there are problems, and in the presentation by the National Treasury last week, we saw that the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services is, you know, taking money to this institution as part of, I don't know whether I'm technically right, but to try and recapitalize the institution, because it is also facing financial challenges. The issue of financial sustainability is an issue. I remember, you know, about the strike in 2014 of our performance, the issue of now clients having, you know, not so good perception about even Postbank as the division of the South African Post Office. Because the institution is not financially sustainable and you're saving with the post bank, you worry about your savings and then you end up taking your money, and then that is not good, because the South African Post Bank is the bank owned by the state. You know, our asset is very important. You know, in terms of its strategic role, even in 25 years of existence, the report under the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. So there were many issues. I will not go into detail there, you know, because if you see under financial sustainability, you know, the ratio of liabilities to assets is so small that you cannot see the institution functioning in the foreseeable future unless government comes to rescue it.
everything that happening, and then after tax net loss of about 1.5 million and all those things. So even because if there are issues with the financial sustainability of the institution, there will be issues around the operational sustainability of the institution. You know, there will be a very tense atmosphere in the institution because the staff is not, you know, certain about its future. They don't know what future holds for them. So you find, you know, in the plan action, all these things happen. Also clients. And you remember, if there's a strike at post office, it means people are studying through you, Mr. will not be able to submit their assignment timely. And then you find that these institutions, they don't care, they are expecting you to submit your assignment. And then people will fail, you know, the economy, because, you know, your career thing is huge. If this thing is delayed, you know, in business time is money, you know, contracts can be cancelled on the basis of that. So it's a huge problem. And, you know, government, I believe, through this turnaround strategy, a microscope is there now to ensure that focus is there, sustainability is there. But obviously, this committee and parliament that need to be part of this big solution to ensure that the institution really becomes a success. And then the other bearing issue is the issue of massive leadership instability. I think this is what one of the root causes, as you can see. It has been 2-3 CEOs, 4 CFOs, and I don't know what's happening. But 3 CEOs and 4 CFOs. And 3 board chairs between 2012 and 2015. So maybe in a nutshell, there's been a massive leadership instability in that period. Hell, you see all these challenges happening. Whether this is a root cause or else people just run away when the institution is facing challenges, you know, that remains to be interrogated. And there are many issues. I'll not go through them one by one. I'll try and sit and see what is most glaring. Okay, the last one on the investigation, I think, this also highlighted the magnitude of the problem, because the institution in its annual report admitted that they had a lot of investigations. But because these investigations, they cost a lot of money. You know, they had to recover, they had to go through these investigations in order to punish people and then recover the money lost. But the investigations are so costly because if I let someone is suspended for full pay, and if the CEO, maybe the CEO, a million or above, the CFO, to that man, so, you know, administering a disciplinary process by its own is a very expensive exercise, and you are still paying these people, and then if someone is acting, you say, as a result, they ended up saying, okay, let's just cut these investigations because it's costly, and then people just resign and left the institution unharmed, if I may use the word, you know, maybe others went to other SOEs and so on and so forth. So this is the magnitude of the problem. It's very important to make sure that the people who are in these institutions, you know, are selected diligently, because when they make progress, it becomes difficult to make them pay, because you have to follow the due processes, and they are very expensive. In this case, they ended up leaving without facing any music, if I may use the word. So I think that's one of the most glaring issues. And even on this one, I don't think I need to really, really talk too much about it, South African Express. I think it has been brought to the attention of the community, even in the State of the Nation address, where the president even, the minister, spoke about the process of finding ways to create a measure between SAA Express and SAA to try and streamline, you know. So we don't know where that process is, or whether, because when I
consulted with the Center for Public Enterprise, she told me that that process may be ongoing, but the challenge, you know, they have different challenges. So forming a measure is not an easy process, especially when there are these deep problems, because we need to sort out this problem and find a way of, you know, streamlining. Because if you streamline problems, then you are creating a big problem. As we know, SPA now is eyeing the national treasury because of the challenges and so on and so forth. So, you know, these are national allies. Every country has got an ally, you know, it's the pride of the nation, you know. Every country has got an ally, but it's got challenges. But they are key, you know, even to economic growth, because you must move on time in business, you know. You must not delay, people must not have negative perceptions about your airlines, because it affects business as well. Perception in business is everything. So the sooner these problems are sorted out, the better even for the economy of the country, the closer we can get to the NDP as well. So there are issues of financial sustainability, the very same issue around expenditure management, issues around procurement, then provision, section 51 of the KFMA, and then the issue of asset management. I think that's still a problem with AliExpress. I think here focus is required, because when it is said that proper control systems to safeguard and maintain the assets of these entities were not implemented throughout the financial year, that is an issue of safety. You know, if it is an airline and then there are issues around the maintenance of assets, if those are assets relating to, you know, the airplane, then there's a problem. Maybe these are one of the areas. You know, it may not be that the committee invites in different forums, you know, because members are exposed, you know, in different forums, to try and engage. What is this issue around the issue of the problems with maintaining the assets of the institution that affect the functionality of the airlines, you know? So I think that's one of the issues. And then there are issues of governance, issues of, you know, I think Airline around financial reporting is one of the institutions that we found that over and over again they submit their financial statements to the FDA every late. And this is a contravention of PFMD. And it tells you, because when an institution is delaying to submit, it's because they are challenged. Whether they are finding the way of, you know, making these challenges look better, or, you know, but the bottom line, it is a contravention, you know, so that cannot be taken lightly. And then, okay, it's the Central Energy Fund. That's the issue here, so I will not talk too much. Maybe just to bring this institution to the attention of the committee, why it is important. Because these are some of the institutions that go, sometimes they go unnoticed because they are not in media and so on and so forth. This is an institution reporting under the Department of Energy. It is a head to truth. It's also a major public entity. It's a company, actually. The responsibility of the institution is to search for appropriate energy solutions to meet the energy needs of South Africa, the South Saharan region, and then the Sahel region. So they focus not only on electricity, but also on oil, gas, solar energy, low-smoke fuels, biomass, wind, and renewable energy. So when we talk about the sustainability, So when we talk about the issue of creating sustainable energy in South Africa to support economic growth and job creation, it's not only ESCOM. The Central Energy Fund is very, very key. It's a very important institution. And you see, it does not operate within the country, even on the continent, in the Sahel region and in South Sahara. It's a very key institution. Even if you remember, the issue of energy is very key in the 9-point plan, which was announced by the President in 2015,
as one of the measures to deal with the immediate challenge to economic growth. So this institution is very key. So when we're discussing issues of energy in whichever forum, this institution must be part of that discussion. The problem are not as severe as those that we see in the other institutions. I don't qualify for this opinion in 2014-15. Yes, it's been the case since 2011-12 that never received a clean audit. You know, they are not receiving a disclaimer or a qualified or an argument. So, but what I thought is not so good under audit committees, the fact that audit committee members are not all directors of the company, as required by Section 94, Subsection 4A of the Companies Act of South Africa. You know, to me, that I think is an issue that it's not good. Because if the act says all audit committee members must be directors of the company, and then it can't be that others who are not directors of the company, but the bottom line is a contravention. And then there are issues of procurement. If an appropriate audit evidence will not obtain that quotations and contracts were awarded to suppliers whose matters have been declared by staff, that it's a contravention. The preferential procurement regulation for it requires that to happen. And then goods and services not procured through a procurement process which is fair, equitable, transparent, and competitive. Section 51 of the PSMA. Here, you know, the issue of fairness, you know, it's big when think of the agenda of government to transform the economy of South Africa. So if contracts are not given a fair process, we'll find that, you know, people who are supposed to benefit, especially as part of the transformation agenda, does not benefit. Maybe it goes to the same big guys over and over again, which defeats the agenda of transforming the economy of South Africa. And then the old story of expenditure management, which I say stroke leadership, the accounting authority not taking effective steps to prevent irregular expenditure, contravention. And then the last one, the next, again, issues are not big. This one is normally overlooked because it's somehow similar to the NYDA. And the MIPA receives a lot of attention, and then this one gets lost in the details. So the MPA is very important. It's report, no, I think there's a mistake. It's report under the Department of Social Development because it deals with social issues, not a DOP. It's a Schedule 3 public entity. But its mandate is to eradicate poverty in South Africa through assisting civil society organizations that focus on the developmental needs of poor communities. So this is very key in the agenda of eradicating poverty in South Africa. We know that is central in the NDP. That is an immediate challenge given the issue of high unemployment, the triple challenge of unemployment in the community. So that is very key, but the issues are not very, very glaring. Maybe when we look at the earlier slide, they also been receiving unqualified audit opinion findings. There are issues with procurement, sufficient appropriate audit evidence that could not be obtained, that a contract was awarded to bidder based on fault giving or criteria that were stipulated in the original invitation for bidding. Contravention of supply chain regulating, trade regulation, the preferential procurement regulation, and then the preference point system not applied in all procurement of goods and services above 30,000. Again, another contravention, and then around this financial management did not prepare irregular, accurate, and complete financial and performance report data supported and evidence by reliable information. So that gives the AG, you know, a big headache. How to audit an institution? You know, there's no evidence to back up what is reported. And then financial management, compliance with the relevant legislation is not regularly monitored, and non-compliance is not timely addressed. So again, it's also an issue of leadership. I think I'm done with the first set of this department, and my colleague will then follow with the other entities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President. One of the things that I want to also highlight is the issues around the cost of defense, that we need to put the flag of our heads going forward. It's the issue that said the cost of defense received 3.7 billion rand in July bailout package. Yes, this year. The 3.7 billion rand was the same cost of defense. Yes, so as a bailout in July. So we need to actually follow up. The committee may need to follow up to see if there is actually an impact going forward by the particular bailout, so that we are able to say these guarantees that are issued on entities are making an impact, are actually utilizing institutions. We don't have institutions that every now and then come and ask for bailouts, but we don't realize the bailout. 3.7 billion rand issued for the post office is very much important for the committee to actually look into going forward. Chair, I will proceed with the organization and passenger rail agency of South Africa, which is PASA. It's an entity that is very strategic that reports to the Minister of Transport. It's strategic in the sense that one of its core functions is to reverse the underinvestment in the public transport sector. To ensure that all Africans are provided in that effort with a decent transport mode at various levels. The institution has received the received what we call an unqualified audit of opinion findings. Most of the issues, Chair, what I want to let that they are common throughout the entities. So I'm not for the committee with the details in each and every single entity. But I have key issues that I think the committee can actually take into going forward. For instance, PASA, around the issues of procurement, there is a concern around the you know, the PASA is currently embarking on a program called Rail Modernization Infrastructure, as well as the procurement of the new locomotive. And there's a budget for that particular exercise of roughly about 66 billion rand, more than rand, that's the allocation. And that program will have to be rolled out over a 10-year period. There is a procurement that has been done so far. There is a concern around Sika currently of the trains, of the locomotives that were projected. There were about 88, and they were centralized to 70. But what is interesting here, the fact that the budget was not reduced. Instead, the budget was increased. From 3.5 billion rand for those trains to 4.8 billion rand. So there was an increase of 1.2 billion rand of the budget on trains. But meanwhile, the quantity or the number of trains to be charged in that particular budget was revised from 88 to 7. So the question will be again, like, are we actually realizing value for money in this particular transaction? And what led to the later revision of the number of trains and the adjustment of budget upwards? Because we see an inverse relationship between these two things. And whether it's as a result of the exchange rate or any other things, we are just guessing. There is no reason that has been provided as far as the reports are concerned as to why this transaction looks so strange. So we think that this is one of the things that the committee, when it invites PASA, it should also look into. Because 1.3 billion rand increase is equivalent, almost equivalent to a budget of 80%. Such as small development, small business and development. And for PASA is just, you know, an addition to a project. Well, the issues around procurement are almost similar, we're not building size. The prepayment that has been made by PASA also, I had a cause for concern, because how do people pay money to contractors or to service providers without receiving a savings? How guaranteed are you that the savings are going to receive of the specification that you require if you have paid already? That's why then you see court after court litigation being made, because then when they deliver, the contract has been
instance, were given an advance visit because of cash flow problems. And we find that sometimes the school does not get to be delivered in time. And there are problems, there are challenges, there are issues, because they get the money and spend it for a while instead of actually focusing on the program.
I'm just asking for the presenter to be a bit close. I want to catch him.
So thank you. My apologies, Honorable Shope, for that. The other issue was the financial losses there. You know that PRASA has got subsidiaries, companies that fall under lease, such as the Autopex, Socialosa, Insight. The loss of 28 million rand was reported by Interfax in 2014, and that was attributed to revenue that was accepted, but it was not received. And that's what the issue of cross-observation comes about, because then those entities or subsidiaries that are doing well will then cater for the shortfall of the other entity. And that's why I think then the entity needs to do a little bit of exercise to check the sustainability and the feasibility of all the subsidiaries. And church is really, is there a value that each subsidiary is bringing on board? Or it's a matter of bailing out one after the other? So that bailout does not only happen at a global level, if you think about it, but it happens within the groups of the subsidiaries, because they both to actually subsidize each other in the case of shortfall. So we ought to look at that. Is it a permanent attention, or is it was just an incident that happened because of, you know, a certain incident or certain issue that can result in the long term? The governance issues here we've spoken about, the non-compliance, suffice to say that an issue around the contract of this rolling stock that was issued, which amounted to 17.9 billion rand. And that contract which was awarded, there were a lot of non-compliance issues that were highlighted. For instance, some bidders had a conflicting interest, and those bidders, by virtue of the PFMA, Section 51.1A, Commercial 3, they ought to disqualify. The agency needs to exercise its prerogative to disqualify those figures where there is a conflicting interest. But those figures were not disqualified. And also, there were issues around also the submission of quotation terms after the closing date. When the agency requests for quotes, there is a deadline that we request all bidders to all the quotations to begin at a certain time. So once the closing date has come, it's a cut-off, time and last. Why do we go on and consider conditions after a certain date? I mean, it's a simple compliance issue as well. There were some instances where payment were made without following proper supply chain policy, even without the contract. I mean, those are things that the company must put at the back of its mind as we engage with the customer. And the thing that all of these entities, and my colleagues have presented some of them, they run limited activities. The committee ought to look into inviting them sooner rather than late, because the situation is really, really, really untenable in some of them. We are not seeing all entities like that. There are entities that are doing well. There are entities that are performing good, which we've outlined in one of the pages in our presentation. But last thing, those that have got more problems, the committee maybe needs to have a conversation sooner rather than late, so that the community can begin to understand the intricacies of all the challenges that you are highlighting. Chair, one of the things that we've highlighted right is also the train accident that took place last year. We wanted to bring before the attention of the committee that these three incidents, Chair, one that happened in Denver in April, costed the entity roughly 22 million. Yeah. 22 million rand. We are saying, Chair, what we want to highlight to you is the three train accidents that took place last year, the cost thereof. So what we want to highlight is that the each and every accident that took place, whether in the rail transport, road transport, air transport, there is a property limit
there's a loss of property, there's a financial loss, and there's a loss of life. So that's how severe impact is of this accident. So we are saying that maybe we, as a committee, we need also to have a conversation around the investigation. What sort of findings and recommendations are found after investigating this accident? And whether the engineers taken extra good short-term measures to put in place to make sure that such does not happen in the future, especially when there's an incident, the human error, and incidents, and so forth.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just a point of clarity, these claims that we're talking about, are they restricted to just loss of assets, or is it including claims from passengers or families of those that may have died as a result of the accident or injury?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the report, it was not broken down. It was not clarified whether passengers or the property only. But it was just a quantum figure that said it's a loss. It's a loss. It's a financial loss that happened, that occurred during that accident. So I'm going to put it to 22 million, right? 22 million, right? Yes. It might be an amount of money that the loss during the accident, when you look at the properties, the rate, damage to rates, the damage to trains, and also the medical expenses that were taken on that thing. But you realize that some of these things, the investigation will take longer because it also depends on the availability of information. So I think that's the question that the entity will have to respond to say how do they break down this financial losses? What is contained in the financial losses? I think the entity can clarify that question quite clearly. That's why I was saying, if you're just receiving a student, has got financial losses. So we ought to monitor that and ensure that extra social measures are put in place. Especially if the accident happens as a result of negligence or human error. And the next slide is on the South African Social Security Agency. Again, the issues are also common. But SASA, you know that the CHS is one entity that gets the largest portion of our budget that the committee approves. So it's very much important for that entity to be stable, for that entity to have all systems in place, because it manages the largest part of our resources. And it's a very strategic institution in terms of cushioning support against any economic shocks and regional pressures that one may come across. Especially when you have 30.5% of our population depending on social grants. Issues on governance are also common, wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure. The audit committee, what's more interesting is that even the audit committee has raised some concern around the effectiveness of internal control systems. Now, if you are managing such a huge budget, you ought to have the internal control systems intact. You also have your risk management strategy in there. You know, the amount of vacant homes, which amounted to 48.8% of the total number, is also warranted. We also wanted to raise the issues around some of the issues that on the ground, people who are beneficiaries of the federal grant are complaining about. One, the issue of the illegal detection that has been going on for quite some time, where the loan sharks are actually deducting their repayments directly from the SARS account. And the amount of money that is being paid to those beneficiaries is truly key to the loan sharks deducting. Even for them, and we understand that, people are desperate and are poor and they want something to actually cushion them before they get paid their loans. But for them to actually borrow money against the small amount of money that they have been paid by SASA, it's a problem. It's a problem also. So the issue of illegal deduction, SASA may have to look into it. because also the issue of deducting money of the people without their consent, and it's one of the things that we need to clarify with SACA. So what the kind of system we are putting in place to make sure that these things do not affect the very same poor. Because the intention is to cushion them. Now, if you have them thrown into the end of long term, then what impact does this system going to make in the long term? Are they affecting the poor, or are they affecting the long term to make more profit? Those are some of the questions that we need also to tackle around with that as an entity. If you say that we need to bring to attention the issue of the funeral cover, there's an amount of money that 10% of the social grant that the Social Security Assistance Act allows for SASSA to deduct the funeral cover. And in our view, say is that a social grant is for a child. It's not for general expenses. So a child needs to enjoy his or her relative insurance. So we need to find a way to, because I think this is allowed by the act. We need to find a way to say, are we not denying the child an amount or an opportunity to enjoy his full package that is given to them? Another issue here on that, the same issue, is the fact that when the child turns 18 years, that funeral card is cut off. Then the question is, where does all this money go? You know, it's cut off, that's the same card. Yes. Because remember, the same grant, it only exists to 18 years. Once the child turns 18 years, then he's no longer eligible for a social grant. So, at 10%, where does it go? I mean, how can we find a way to make sure that it's identified? The funeral cover issue should be a parent thing. The parent thing should be something there.
Maybe it's just to add to what Fedan is saying around the issue of social grants going to loan sharks. I think maybe just to summarize it, it's what the chairperson always says is about impact. If the first thing, the child support grant now goes to a loan shark or goes to a federal car, I was making an intended impact. You may find the government is allocating this money, but because of these small and innocent things, and then the impact is not happening, and that's not what you want to see. And maybe another point I need to raise. In our previous presentation, I think members can recall that the Department of Social Development was one of the very good departments in terms of receiving clean audits. I think in 2016 years, I can't remember very well. But when you look here, SASSA is not getting that very same clean audit, and SASSA get a very significant share of the budget it is giving to social development. So when you look at social development, you say, really everything is well, but the implementation is done through SASSA, is done through NGA. And if these institutions are not getting a clean audit, it doesn't matter whether the Department of Social Development is getting a clean audit. Only transfer money is making entities that need to be put under the spotlight. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Musa, for that. The issue here is the issue of fraud and corruption. That issue has been very problematic. I know SASSA has done some strides, has implemented some programs to try and roll out corruption, but it still persists. We've seen in the media some time ago officials hiding behind the head. The counters for the camera when the cutting air can be. And that issue chair, we find an official chair asking for 1.5 from a poor old lady to get his grant. For the lady or for the child to get his grant that is given for free by government, he or she must pay a 1.5 grant. Chair, we are raising the concern around the issue of foreign corruption at SASSA. We know that certain programs, anti-corruption programs, have been implemented. But we are still seeing instances where, when the media investigates and gets into the SASSA premises, officers are running away from the camera because they were caught in the camera asking for a bribe, you know, from a poor lady. You know, an applicant for a grant must pay a certain amount for his or her forms to be processed. Those are the issues here that the entity needs to actually deal with. And what, before the comments to say, what are the measures and mechanisms are we putting in place? Are they enough? What is then the problem? Is the problem the salaries we are using to the staff? Are they enough? Are the systems we put in place to actually cap these kinds of questions? So that one is to say that we not shy away when we present this institution, because it's bothering our poor people. Thank you very much. The next entity chair is South African Airways, SAA. You recall, chair, that the annual report of this entity was not tabled, so it's not available. So, but we did try to get some issues for the committee to look into, and very critical issues for that matter. We discovered that in 2014, chair, the entity tabled a what we call long-term turnaround strategy in 2014. And therefore, maybe it is important for the committee to actually look into the impact of that long-term turnaround strategy. If there is any noticeable impact, are there any gains or improvements that have made as far as the turnaround strategy is concerned? Or is that another turnaround strategy that will also not work? I'm sure. So, that's a very important one. We noted that for the FAA, for the airline to remain an ongoing concern, it requires a bailout of 5 billion rand. That's a very important issue for the committee to look into. And we know that the treasury has agreed to that bailout, but the treasury is putting some conditions. To say, we'll give you the guarantee of 5 billion rand, provided you do A, B, and D. And now that's where the problem starts. Because the airline is not agreeing with those conditions. So, what do you mean by the committee must also look at? Well, the issue of bailout, I can tell you, it's a bigger problem than just the FAA. You've got quite a list of entities that have received bailout through the guarantees, state guarantees. And one day, if some of these entities default the payment, it comes to the fiscal. And therefore, the question is, how ready are we in our fiscal to take up for that extra repayment? We are currently running a budget deficit where we have to pay repay a loan that has been given by government as a top license for the expenditure framework. Yes, the economy grows is also at 0% at the moment. Now, if you've got entities that are getting bailout and they are not using those guarantees to recapitalize themselves, to sustain themselves, and make sure that they are selling their own food, their own sleep, then this is a problem in the world. We've already spoken about the Hong Kong story. We've already spoken about the threatening of FAA by Hong Kong around the financial statement. So the issue of financial statement test is a big issue. It's slightly going to be grounded by our counterparts. It's a yearly problem that needs to be attended to. One of the issues that we also wanted to raise is the procurement. There is a company called BNP Capital, which was appointed by FAA in the beginning of this year, as a transaction advisor. In fact, the work that the company needed to do was to help FAA to restart up this 15 billion rand debt. And so after doing that, then you need another company to implement the recommendations that were made by the company. But then what happened was that the company was appointed again to implement its recommendations without tender. And that constitutes some conflict of interest. One. Two, you're also violating the supply chain management policies. Because you must actually advertise tender and follow the two processes. One of the worrying factors for the result of that was the fact that the PMB capital work was going to cost the FAA about 250 million rand to do that work. But when you look at the market, the other competitors would have costed far less, roughly 85 million rand. So the BNP capital would have costed three times the so it's one of those things that you ask, really ask yourself and check if really we are respecting our rules and regulations that we pass, supply chain policies, TSMA, clear regulations and so forth. We will go beyond that to say how do we appoint our service provider in this practical.
And in life, because SAA is actually struggling in terms of financial stability, how do you begin to appoint service providers that are costing three times the market value when you don't have money, when you need a bailout? It's a pure management, financial management function, governance, and so on and so forth. The next indicator is the broadband debacle. Same issue, Chair, of governance. Broadband and Super Share is a very entity, especially if we were to meet the deadline of 2020 migration from analog to digital, which is the universal asset. So the Infraco is actually very important in that respect. So the performance of Infraco and the systems in Infraco are very much important to be intact for us to deliver that. I'm not going to go through the issues because they are also common. Leadership, governance, investigation, and so forth. Then you have Chair FABC, which is the South African Broadcasting Authority. Issues there also are common. Performance information, there was some concern around predetermined objectives, which leads to performance targets not being achieved adequately when there are issues around predetermined objectives. Because we find that the information, the reliability of information, and also the measurability of those targets is a problem. So it's one of those issues that affect the performance side of things. Then around financial management, governance, lack of compliance policies. You have seen the erratic expenditures, you have seen the wasteful expenditure. And one of the things that you've noted is that the wasteful expenditure around entities is quite higher compared to those of the departments. I'm not sure it's because of the size of their budgets and the fact that they are able to generate revenues on their own, and they end up having, you know, more money that they spend without realizing any value, because the wasteful expenditure is a simple money that has been spent in vain. So your late payment, the penalties are late payments. Whatever payment that you ought to make, if you don't make on time, then whoever that you are paying to will charge you an extra penalty. Officials who have not checked the flight on time have to rearrange their pay-by. The fee that needs to be paid on that. So that's the risk expenditure. Some of the procurements that are done in vain, where when computers are placed, are procured, but there is no proper preparation kind of work to actually make sure that those computers, when they arrive, they are functional, they are given staff. You find that those computers are still lying in the store for a number of, period of 12 months, and that is an example. That's an expenditure that has been occurred in vain.
Let's go ahead to the line. You know, Chairperson and members, what we found for us to be appalling is the issue of not fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It's small things, but they cost a lot of money. There are instances where we found amounts to the tune of 1.5 million for late payments to service providers, for late submission to us. And those monies cannot be recovered. Now we're speaking millions. Yeah, in and out millions for late payments to service providers, late submission to staff. I mean, that is inexcusable. You know, those are the things that I think can be dealt with immediately if consequences, you know, are put in place. If people face the consequences for such small things. So that's one of the things that I thought maybe needs to be brought to the attention of the company.
Thank you, Mr. Vanessa. NPTR is a shared employment subsidiary. This is an entity that reports to the Department of Labor. It forms part of Program 4 of the Department of Labor Check. This entity was formed in 1993, but this formation, it was never realigned to the new financial management reform, which is the Public Finance Management Act. It's only now that the bill has been, the act that was passed in 2014, which then formalized the establishment. So the intention around this entity chair is to create employment for people with disabilities through the textile industry, through the woodwork industry. So they provide what the linen and whatnot to hospitals and all those textiles for them, for each other in hospitals. They also provide all those wood products, desks and so forth, to schools. So it's a very noble and important strategic entity to can bridge the gap that exists between the employment of the people with disabilities vis-à-vis those who are able. You remember that the government of one state came up with a target of 2% here, that every employer must actually employ a 2% of people with disabilities. So this entity is purely catered for people with disabilities. It's very much important there. But there are issues also in the entity chair. That has been Christian. We have seen the expenditure management from irregular to the focus in this field. There are repeat findings chair around independent objectives. There are repeat findings chair around non-compliance legislation. Repeat findings means that there was a finding in the previous financial year, which is similar to the finding that has been made in the research report. And also the repeat findings around the fullness and reliability of performance information submitted. The information submitted with discrepancies and all that. So these are the issues that the entity will need to clear and clean up so that it can perform, it can carry out its mandate and make sure that people with disabilities are given those opportunities. The next slide speaks of a positive outlook. We have sampled about six entities that are clean in terms of the financial management, governance issues, compliance. IDC, Industrial Development Corporation, Telcom, Centec, Small Enterprise Finance Agency, Development Bank of Africa, and DEMEF. However, Chair, this does not reflect on the performance target of the agency. It's only around the financial management part of it, because that's where we need to start. To get things right, to get the entities delivering on their mandate, honorable professor will always say, you must keep records. This is section 61 of the JMA on this subject. So we must keep records. So these guys are able to keep, they're able to do so. They're able to comply with the CFA. So we said, let's have the sample to demonstrate the positive outlook.
Maybe before we close, you'll remember, I think in the MANCOM, we discussed the issue around CFA. You know, because CFA, Sherilyn is mentioning, they are receiving clean audits and all that. But I think a member may have heard stories about DPSA failing to deliver in terms of, because it serves as an implementing agent in most infrastructure projects, for instance, RC. But what we realized is that you find that because of the failure of other institutions like your IDC, as we explained here, that they are failing to meet client demands because of their issues. Now, these products will be taken from these other institutions that are failing to these ones that have got capacity like the CDSA. And while the CDSA now is overloading, they've got so much, whether it's education, whether it's health, whether it's this or that, CDSA is there, they have to implement infrastructure projects. And now they are failing. So, what we realized, you know, as a team, as a story, that, you know, when one entity fails, affect others, because the work that was supposed to be done by that entity will be taken to another entity. And then when that happens, the other entity will end up having too much work to do. As a result, it will also collapse. And then negative perceptions, you know, everything will spiral out of control. So we thought that we should brought to the attention of the
Maybe by way of concluding, Chair, on the last slide. The United States, we've seen the governance issues being prevalent across the board. Non-compliance issues are being prevalent.
That's the message to people. When we listen to any federal regulations, public faces, act, public faces regulations, and so forth. And listen to her, the TMA have got its tips in Section 81, which gives the accounting officer the responsibility to take action against any non-compliance to staff the office. We are saying here, Section 81 again gives the responsibility to the executive authority to take action against any accounting officer or head of department that has actually violated the executive framework. We are saying here again, in the recent batch, the committees of parliament are empowered by Section 82 of the Constitution to hold the executive accountable, to hold the department accountable. So therefore, that's an opportunity for the committee to oversee the process if really things are done properly and actions are taken where things are not done. That's where you come in as a committee. In Section 15 of the Constitution to oversee that process. The important chair of LOEs, public entities for government achieving mandate cannot be overemphasized. There are three strengths, key issues or key areas, critical areas. One, entities are established as a vehicle for government to achieve its mandate. Right? Two, they are used, they are established to ensure that government is able to assess the best expertise and skills that the departments in their own cannot assess because of the market conditions, the high competitiveness, where you find government competing with the private sector. So entities are there to place again. Three, entities are in a position to raise funding through government guarantees. And therefore, these three critical areas are very important. As a relationship to government. If entities are not stable, that relationship is shaky. If entities are not well managed in terms of financial management, governance, and stuff, that relationship is shaky. So it comes back to government. Government is unable to deliver on mandate, government can never work with the entity. Some part of its mandate is allocated to entities. So if those entities are unstable, check. If those entities are got working positions, people are happy for more than 2 months as the 651B of the public service regulation. And they have more than that fiscal period, like Mr. Bates, there was implication in terms of achieving the government target. It comes from
the national development. There's a clear goal. If we don't perform, and if we don't perform, and then are we achieving those objectives that are stated in the MDP, we realize the agenda 2030.
And sir, the non-compliance between 55 speaks to the non-submission of the annual financial statement, which has been verified by the trend, the signature, and the second meeting is right of irregular expenditure. That one is a thing. We are saying, sir, irregular expenditure, food labs, and the school has or can be prevented at heart level. One, it's a blank stage. When departments are planning, are putting together their analysis plans, they can come up with measures there in their analysis plans on how are they going to address or arrest irregular expenditure, wasteful expenditure, and unauthorized expenditure. So that they can be able to monitor that on a monthly, quarterly basis and report to it. And if it becomes a target, then it gets full attention of the accounting of the executive and even parliament itself. But if it does not become a target, it falls into cracks, between the cracks, and you'll only discover it at the end of the financial year when you have to do the financial statement. And therefore, maybe they will not be submitted to that because they've got to pass a sticker and make sure that they've taken it. That really this is what will inherit the regulatory thing. Or else, you ought to look at the process of the irregular expenditure before it becomes expenditure. Because before it becomes an expenditure, it becomes as a non-compliance activity. Now, as a non-compliance activity, if you've got the proper things in place, you've got irregular expenditure registered, that it should detect all the possible irregular expenditure. Then you're able to arrest it before you even put money
or qualified as a failure. So we think there is a room here to manage these things. There is a room if people can do the right thing, that's the biggest implication. We are saying also this kind of management implications have got two implications. One, non-financial implications. Two, financial implications. Financial implications, you're looking at this overall figure as being processed on an annual basis, as irregular, wasteful, and whatnot. Particularly around wasteful, because money that do not realize any value. The second impact is on the non-financial, which is the perception that generates within the society, where now members of society begin to trust in government entities and departments because of these reported incidents. So one thing is, if departments and institutions of government can get their acts together to cap these things, the perception outside will also change for the better. The lack of conflict management is very well last week, very much so, Honorable Sikima. And we are saying that maybe we should take a stage where we link the SOB's performance element and manager's performance element with the sound financial control measure. Whether the legislative framework, so that we know whether this issue of non-compliance has been reported. They're not talking about that's been raised. It's a legal or to manage content. One of the things that I may share with you that I came across from my academic studies, from my academic research, was that managers in the public credit are of the view that the responsibility of understanding financial management and good governance is the responsibility for financial management office or the office of the CFO. Whereas they themselves, in their respective divisions, in their respective sections and business units, they manage resources. Now, it's incumbent upon themselves to ensure that they also understand and are aware of what needs to be done, what the system is saying, services is saying, so that they can manage their divisions accordingly. So, the issue around the current guarantee share, we've also discussed, but The issue here is that maybe the committee, we need to have a discussion at some point around the issue of guarantees. And we stand on item. Maybe when the trader comes to table the report on the jobs fund, I know that we are going to meet them at some point for jobs fund. We can add the issue of government guarantees. To say how many entities that have been issued government guarantees to date, and the value of those government guarantees, and the repayment, whether they are still intact, you know, because should any mistake happen, it will come back to the fiscal. And is the fiscal ready to actually cater for that? Especially when you look at institutions like FAA, where there is a lot of instability, post office, and so forth. And again, the other underlying factor is that you can't keep on pumping guarantees in institutions when they can't stand up on their feet. Guarantees are meant to rescue institutions so that they come up with a turnaround scheme and turnaround institution and become self-sustainable. The instability chair of staff, my colleague has spoken about MOFA, ABT, and other institutions, it also impacts on performance. One of the recommendations that we pick up from the Presidential Review Commission's report on SOEs was a very interesting recommendation. We said there needs to be an inter-borrowing mechanism to try and cap the issue of government guarantees or reduce the issue of government guarantees where entities are borrowing money from international financial markets or in locally sometimes. To say, how about entities borrowing one another, lending from one another, so that you avoid the issue of the fee rate, but also avoid the issue of that amount of interest being paid. So if FAA is borrowing from Eskom, they would make an arrangement of reasonable interest. If Eskom is borrowing from DBSA, they will negotiate a reasonable amount of interest, and therefore there's no exchange rate implications in terms of the repayment going forward. Thank you very much.
On the SOE, which aims at 65 to identify
able to then intervene on that in ensuring that we contact me in terms of safety, in terms of increasing economic growth and job creation. Jonathan, thank you very much. I'm now going to allow honorable members to reflect on this presentation and then we engage. Now, I just want to consult the members on the approach. I was thinking that we start with the presentation so that we don't leave things around. That is also the communication. Are we in agreement? First presentation and then next presentation. Otherwise, we have a discussion and move to the next presentation. Agreed? If you are going to be agreeing with me.
Chairperson, I just wanted to add to what you're saying, Chair, that what we should do is simply ask questions of clarity and not an area that are not here to ask. But don't expect answers from the official on behalf of the department or
Makes sense.
We just
engage with the clarity-seeking questions only. And I don't know whether, like me, on some of the presentations, you feel like tomorrow you can call Ms. SOE up here again. Some type of information that we get in is triggering an immediate response is by us. All right. Let's look at the first presentation, which is ICT. Any clarity-seeking questions on the first presentation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this question referred not only to this one but only. I just wanted to know, can the researchers just tell us what was their source of information from them? Was it just the AG's reports or did people other researchers look? Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. One point will take five and then allow the presenters to respond. Any clarification on the first presentation? But then, just to note that the honourable member must have this question. Members are happy, yes, this is right. Move to the next presentation. Alright? The next presentation is on the compensation fund. The IGT is the compensation fund. Any clarification questions? Honourable member,
thank you very much. I just would like to get clarity on the issue of, on page or slide 7. You've already said the compensation fund, where it says the intake losses were due to criminal conduct. I may have missed it. If I can just get clarity as to what criminal conduct that was. And the other thing that you said, Mr. in terms of payment for medical services for patients, does it mean that the hospital, for instance, would ask for the patient to pay? Because then if that is happening, then we have a serious problem. Because the compensation fund, it should be very clear. And maybe then also to just share the meaning of COIDA, it's a compensation Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can we allow the business to respond to the question? Yes, can we do that? Dr.
McDonald? I wanted to ask firstly, we want to appreciate the information that we have been given that is coming up to really contribute and ask the relevant questions to the SOE. I want to check the issue of the DNP. In the presentation, slide number 17, it shows that this particular company was appointed, but they did not have a license, and then the contract was terminated quite recently. What I want to check, does it indicate whether they will pay the money that was quoted, or why was it terminated? Was it because they have concluded their work, or they were terminated because there was a discovery that they did not have a license, so that you can get that client when they come, really come on them? Thanks.
Okay. So, shall we get the responses on the questions?
And thanks, members, for the question. Maybe the first question raised by Honorable McLaughlin is on the issue of sources of information that we use. But on that one, we used, for different vaccines, there were different sources primarily. Maybe the first two sections, that is the dashboard on the track record of audit opinion, and then the other one on a regular, fruitless, and unauthorized expenditure. There we used these reports from the AC, yes, for different years, but there were cases where, because the annual reports were not submitted timely by the institution, you'll find that the AC not then any indication of how much was incurred by this institution. And then there we searched for the relevant annual report from the department. So that's what we did in that section. And then in terms of the last section, which deals with the strategic role and the major challenges, we said that there we focus primarily on the audited information. So that's the annual report. But yes, we did look at other, you know, for instance, your issues in the media, you know, that will give us insight. But then in terms of facts, because some of the issues are there, they are disputed and all that, they serve to give you insight. But in terms of the facts, we say, okay, for now, let us just consider the audited information. Yes. And then on the also there's the annual reports of like the department. Yes. And then on the second question, on the issue of misconduct. Is there, yeah, I really don't know, because the annual report did not give us the details of what sort of misconduct. The only thing we know is that there are ongoing investigations in relation to this criminal misconduct. Perhaps maybe if this institution comes before the committee, then we can then get the details. And it would be advisable, say, for instance, when these institutions are invited, the AG is present. Because I am sure at some point they will dispute some of the issues. And when the AG is not around, you know, you come confirm and say, okay, we'll write to the AG. And then, so it would be better if all affected parties or parties that the one that's reported and the one that, you know, being reported on are under the same rules. So that is the suggestion there. And then in terms of the, that is the compensation fund. Yeah, I think that's a very relevant question, because it's something that I grappled with as well as to. What happens, for instance, if I am a patient because of work-related injury and now I'm at this Medicare hospital, and now there's a standoff between Medicare and the compensation fund, and the compensation fund is not paying. What happens to me? Then also the question that I grappled with, and I could only imagine that one way or the other, I'll get some of messages instead of my bills I'll pay. I don't know what happens afterwards, but I know it will affect me. You know, even my illness can even get worse. So whether the hospital end up asking the patient to pay, or the war just remain between the Niger in the contemplation fund? Yes, I really do not know. So those are the questions that I have to field now.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. In terms of the topic, if I may add, Musa, we also look at some of the discussions around the issues with the flow committees. Perhaps the flow committees they discuss some of the issues and COPA boards as well. But also looked at your public service commission report and also the commissions, the data review commission was also very key because it did some work around the OEs. That's what I wanted to add. Honorable Dr. Madoke, the GND, you know, if Chair is going to do some work for the airline company around the transactional advice or financial advice, so to speak, you ought to possess a particular license. I can't call it a particular license that gives you the credibility that you can actually advise the international airline or the airline company around the issue of finances. Because remember, the finances of the airline are not only looked by us domestic for domestic consumption, but also international. So that company did not have that license in the first place. That was why. That's why we're having a question of how was it procured, how was it appointed. Because it clearly did not meet the requirements of doing that work. And the 250 million was not paid because it did not complete the work. Oh yes, the contract was terminated before the work was completed. So, but in the process of appointing it and some of the things that it did at the time, some monies were spent. And those monies are translating into financial misconduct. For wasteful expenditure and so forth and so forth. But the company did not complete the work as a result of these issues. Did not have a license, non-compliant, the supply chain management policy in appointing it, and also the noise that was made by other stakeholders outside, including the competitors, you know, because the market is very, very busy. You know, everyone wants to have a slice, a piece of slice. And therefore, if you appoint Musa and not appoint me, we know each other in the market. And Musa is not fit and ready to execute that duty. So always know it. And that, mobilize. So I think the airline company then fell in that trap and then it terminated contract even before the report was published. Thank you.
I'll take another point. We now focus on the resident post office.
Thank you, Chair. I think my questions cut across, Chair. I didn't do it first line because I realize there are some questions that we can't ask the researchers clarity on that we will have to ask these entities. But quite interesting for me, Chair, when I looked at the accounting officer's role in the PMFL, under unauthorized expenditure and all of that, and it's quite clear what they are supposed to do. And in all of these entities, I don't see that they have been doing that. And there are no consequences through all of them. So I don't think with what we have currently, and I understand for us as well as EFF, we support the entities, we want them to be still under the state. However, if we're going to continue with things as it is, we're not going to build a state capacity with these entities. So my question would just be for the researchers, if they will be able to do it. What I would like to see is how much money have the state lost in this period and how much money is, because if you, some of these state entities report to departments. So I just want to see like how much money have these entities lost or occur on the department's unauthorized expenditure and all of that. I don't know, am I clear most of the question? You understand? I think the latest, like 2014-15, yeah, I think that's when I was, because we are in that period, and that is the period that we can make change, not account for and make changes to. So I think that period, thank you, Chair. Yes,
I just want clarity with regards to the issue of financial sustainability. We're talking about the liabilities, say they're technically solvent. What I want to know over that, over a couple of years, is the solvency reducing? In other words, we're saying now that the assets are exceeding their liabilities. But over a 3-year or 4-year period, are we seeing that this is going downhill also, which may result eventually of your liabilities exceeding your income or your assets, rather. So I don't know if at some stage if we could just try and get for a couple of years to see what is actually happening there in terms of that. Might give us an idea where we're moving now in because they solve it right now. But if we look at it from a 3-year point of view, then that solvency thing might be decreasing all the time, and we think now they're still solvent. But in another 2 years' time, if it keeps reducing, and they won't be solvent anymore. So that's what I needed to know. If you're talking about only specifically the post office, right? Thank you. And Chair, sorry, I wanted to say, there's also a danger here, where I see it, and from what I've heard from our researchers. Actually, I must just commend them for the fantastic job they're doing. I don't know if they should take on the control and management of the state-owned entities. But having said that, I think there's also a danger when you, especially if you're studying through universities or there are important tender documents, and if someone, may sustain material loss as a result of non-delivery things, they might be even, sued. There might be lawsuits against the post office and things like that if we do not act together. So for me, that is a little bit of concern. But I'll stop it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I just wanted to respond to Honourable Sheikh Khan. If we just look at the information we've been given here, if the total assets exceeded the total liabilities in the last tax year by $850 million, and in the previous tax year it was $2.3 billion, that's a huge drop. So in other words, their solvency has come right down. It used to be very solvent, now it's hardly solvent. And in the next one we told the an increase of 268% from the net loss after tax. So you've gone from 406 million net loss in 1 year to 1.5 billion net loss in the next year, the same again. It's a huge increase. So the chances are one more year and it'll be insolvent, out of business. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. I'm actually taking advantage because I wanted to make a comment about the South African Post Office. That I don't know the internal functioning of the Post Office, but I don't know if the Post Office is the Post Office. I mean, the Post Office is all over the place, and I don't know because we don't post letters, we don't buy stamps, we don't send parcels, we courier things, we email, we do everything. I'm just talking generally in terms of sustainability of the South African Post Office. I'm actually surprised that they continue adding post offices, of course they're doing it for convenience of the public, and all the new malls find a post office. But when you go there, there's hardly ever a queue. You know, in the past, when you went to a post office, you would find queues. Nowadays, you just go in and out. And if it wasn't for the motor vehicle licenses, TV licenses, all telecom services, I don't know what sort of post office is supposed to do. It's just by way really of commenting, because I've just been observing that I am not really sure
about its existence and its being everywhere these days. And I think this is one of the challenges. I don't know how much of that is making an impact on what is happening there. Thank you. It's working because we still receive our post. I still have a post in the post office. I get letters from insurances, I get letters from an OEM, they post, they still post. But it is no more, you know, like before. Everything, you post everything. So I think I agree with the colleague to say that now we email, we do this, but we still get the post.
Yes,
yes. I just wanted to comment that in some instances the functions of the post office have been taken by the government in the country, generally speaking. What I have to say is the space that the post office is to play in the IT environment so that it becomes relevant even to people in the rural area. And I think that if the post office remains stagnant, the old post office that was the post office when I was born some many years ago, then it's not fit to be written.
Thank you, Sir Justin. And like Honorable Low, I don't work according to sections. I just summarize my input. But first, I want to say to my neighbor here that, you know, in Akonwuk, Mpumalanga, where my post office is, you see, I stay in Limpopo, but my post office is in Mpumalanga. Every time I go there, I stand in a queue until I ask for a chair. And they don't even give me a chair because the queue is so congested. So I think I actually quarreled with the post office officials because I know them. And I said, I'm going to report you to the minister. And then they said, we are understaffed. We are not coping with the activities. I think they have added other functions to the post office. So the post office in certain rural areas is still very relevant. Because in some areas people don't have emails, like where I come from. I actually went over weekend, I sometimes go to my home in Mwamito Zani. The Mwamito post office, there is always a queue. It's a rural place. So I think the rural areas still use the post office and they still need it. But what I wanted to say, Honorable Chair, when I was sitting here, I was just wanting to take the committee down memory lane. When I actually came with a slogan that the duty of this committee is different, we are not a portfolio committee. Ours is to follow the money. And when I said that, I said it after the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Public Works, and I think another department, maybe it's Energy, I don't know, and Water, they came here. When they asked them, why are you messing up the money? They said, oh no, we actually transfer the money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you remember? So I said, we must follow the money. If the money has left the department, this committee's job is to go and find it where it is and make sure that it is properly used. It doesn't matter whether it is transferred to PRASA and PRASA transferred it to 9 other subsidiaries and the subsidiaries transferred. This committee, we must follow the money to the bitter end. Because we appropriate this money. You can't just give departments money and go for a summer holiday. We are the opposite of SCOPA, and that is why it is essential for the special. Always, I must compliment you. You did a very good job by looking at the auditor's record. You can't come to appropriation and question without knowing the history, which is found in the Auditor General's report. But also, you must also read SCOPA report, because that is where the interaction took place. So I am saying, Jefferson, in my humble rural mind, that I think the portfolio committees are doing enough with the department. Let us concentrate on the SOEs, because that is where the bulk of the money that we appropriate is going, and it is getting lost. We also asked some of them when they came here that, do you have audit committees? They say, now we got them and then we can bring them back. But now here is the research. It doesn't speak to that. It shows very clearly that monies are just spent any other in the SOE. So I am suggesting that we actually look for a week and call the and just deal with them. But when we call an SOE, we must call the accounting officer of the department under which that happens. Because the PSMA puts the accountability on the accounting officer. You know, in 1998, in the old assembly, I was chairperson for finance in Limpopo. Trevor Manuel used to call all of us chairpersons of finance from the provinces to a workshop on each chapter of the bill. It was a bill then. And we asked him that, why do you want to put accountability on the accounting officer? And he explained at length that if you want accountability at all, you will be chasing the minister. That minister never stays in the office. He hardly sees a headbook. In fact, we don't want him even to touch a headbook. So the accounting officer is the person. We're not even worried about the commissioner. I heard you talking about a commissioner, and I'm not worried about that commissioner. The act is not talking about commissioner. The accounting officer is responsible. The spirit of the act, when we discussed it at the beginning, we said we are allowing managers to manage and hold them to account. Those are the two things. We allow them to manage, but we hold them to account. And that is why the act ever says that any other person under the accounting officer, account to the accounting officer. But the accounting officer accounts for everything. So I would wish Chairperson that we call this paradigm with the DG of the department, he must be here, and treasurer, because the constitution puts the responsibility of the assets of the state on the treasurer. Where are they? Are they part of it when all these things happen? Thank you.
And the audit came from the institution.
No, it's not coming from me, that's why.
When I'm saying it comes, I'm just adding there to think it's important to say it's important to have the auditor general who can then explain when they dispute their report.
No, Chair.
I was a member of the Auditor General. There is an Act of Parliament that insists on the independence of the Auditor General. You don't have to call me, you will write the report. But what I want to do is a report of the Parliament, which will be influenced by our interaction with the SOE and the treasury and the DC. We are going to see this report after we have thoroughly read the report of the previous day of the Auditor General and the recommendations of SCOPA. Then we will write a report and then call the Auditor General or write a letter to the Auditor General asking him to do some forensic audit on things that you are not doing.
Honorable Member.
Jan.
You know, I want us to give one of the questions. Okay? I want us to give a chance
to respond to the question. Allow me. No, I agree with the Honorable Member, a short before. However, the independence of the Auditor General, we understand. But because of the time constraints for the committee, because there are lot of work that we have as a committee, I think it would be better to invite the Auditor General to be here, not just to question the Auditor General, so that they cannot say something that would be contrary, you know, because they always dispute. As the presenters will say, they are disputing issues on the report per se. But if now it's in the absence of the Auditor General, we will have a problem. I want to support the education chair to say that we must put it there. And also agree with the Honorable colleague to say that the accounting officer can delegate the task, but not the responsibility. That's what we want to do.
Well, thank you so much for all your input. We will now allow the researcher to respond.
I just want to agree with what you have said now and what you said, but put a condition that when the Auditor General comes here, we are saying he must be here. We are not expecting him to answer questions because the Auditor General does not come first, he researches. So we must not let him violate his way of thinking. We must give him time to go and work. We must not be tempted to say, oh, Mr. General, you have a good question. Hey, but you know what? We don't have a question.
Okay, remember, we have committed ourselves to working and, you know, professional. So I'm sure we will accept that. Thank you very much. Shall we then get the researcher to respond?
Yeah, thank you very much, Madam Chair. We take it that most of the issues were comments rather than questions. And some were cutting across. But some questions have been answered by members. But just clarity, second question on the below, you want us to do an exercise on the laws that has been incited by all entities. Yeah, that's why I'm trying to check. But also, you note on the below that the authorized expenditure has been checked, has been managed very well. So it does not appear. Yeah, if we are only going to zoom into irregular and wasteful expenditure. So that too, we submit to you. For unauthorized, fine, clean. Yeah, everybody seems to be doing well on that one. Yeah. The issue around the invite of the FOEs, I agree with Honorable Shoker to the need, Honorable Shoker to say the need to invite FOEs and so forth, because they receive transfers from state. However, some FOEs are able to generate their own revenue. And therefore, the amount of transfer that they receive from the department is a small portion of it, which is for operational purposes. Some years, we ought to break them down when we do like a time. Some do receive a huge chunk of money like SASA, and some for infrastructure. But mainly, there are some most entities that just get their own revenue, like a DBSA, like your ESCOM, and so forth and so forth. So what we do to them is very small. What I want to propose as an addition to that proposal is that maybe we also look at the municipalities and provinces, because there's a large number of transfers that is done to provinces and municipalities for the infrastructure. That comes in the form of conditional grants and so forth. Whether direct or indirect conditional grants, there's a lot of money that goes into that unnoticed. So those are all transfers that we may need to look at. Chairperson. No, thanks. Let me also add something.
I'm going to suggest that now I'm going to be entertaining the last 5 minutes and then ask questions across the venue. Let me welcome the membership in the storage that you can see. So I'm now allowing the last 5 minutes so that you can connect the three of the comments. So we have two reports, and they're very important. So I will now take Honorable Member McLaughlin, Honorable Member Shota Chitori, Honorable Member Mukwakana, and Honorable Member Lowe, the last one, Honorable Member Kuma. We had to then close and I think we have to close the discussion on the stage and the
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. There was just some comments that have arisen out of this and the presentation received last week. My initial overall feeling is that if we were in any developed nation, every single one of the managements of these entities would be fired by now. We're not in that kind of situation, I know, but it's very worrying that we sit in this kind of situation. Last week we didn't see one single green compliance lock in any of the 20 departments we looked at. Today we see in these SREs, time after time after time, it's just a failure to comply, a failure to follow the rules. People just do as they please. And I think it's because of what Honorable Sheikh Mum said last week, Honorable Bowers said it today, and there's just no consequence. You do not get into trouble for doing the wrong thing. You can do as you like and nothing happens. And I think it's possibly us as a committee, we must take this on board as our issue. If we're going to turn anything around, if we're going to change it, that has to happen. People have to become accountable. There has to be a consequence for non-compliance, a consequence for criminal or negligent act on the part of our officials and employees. Otherwise, what's the point? We're all wasting our time. Honorable Chaukatatori said correctly that it's our task to follow the money. If we were also given a chance to look beforehand, a lot of these things wouldn't happen. If we look at Prasa, for example, and the amount of money that they've got under their control, it's just the tune of about 30 billion rand that they commit. We didn't know anything about it in this committee until it's too late. The contracts with the locomotives has already been concluded, money has been spent, and then we hear about it. Then we go to Prasa and have a look. I wrote a letter to the minister earlier this year, I think it was, suggesting that we maybe broaden our scope as an appropriations committee, that we look at things before they happen. So once the tender process is closed, perhaps the department needs to come to us and say, this is what we want to do, we now need your go-ahead on the money that we want to commit to this. So we could maybe just have a better look at it before all this money is spent, and then we realize, as we have with the process of things very often, we wasted a lot of money. We've got a whole lot of stuff we can't use. As Norma said as well, we've got computers that sit in cabinets and storage facilities that nobody ever looks at because we didn't really need them at the time we bought them. It was some clever salesman comes along and tells you an idea and we go with it. But if there's a mechanism to check that before it actually happens, I think it would really help us as a nation to achieve more with the money we've got. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I first want to support what my colleague is saying, that we must be proactive. And if you remember, Honorable Glowin, a lot of people asked me in the last debate on the passing of the budget, when I said every corruption and every mismanagement in this country is to be blamed on the members of parliament. Because it is our task, it is our task to look at these things, to improvise ways of making sure they don't happen. But we don't do that. We go to Parliament and say, ah, the department, they've given a strategic plan. We approved the budget. Why did we do that? Why didn't we say this thing? So it is very, very important to do self-examination first. And we don't come to committees and say, right, then we don't have time. We must work like don't fast. If need be, we must work until 8 o'clock at night. That is how the portfolio committee on trade and industry works. We must work on Fridays. That is what we want to do, because the persons are spending the money the whole week, and you think you are going to look at it in 30 minutes. It won't happen. So I am saying, I support you. We need to see those things. And the Constitution of the Republic allows us to call anybody in the Republic, including Mr. Romo, those FOE that make their money. The thing is, they got one hand from the state. Two, they are trading in the name of the Republic of South Africa, in the name of the state. If they make money in the name of the state, even if we didn't give them anything, they must come here. Otherwise, they must close shop. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Just a short request for clarity. You know, on slide number 14, Russia, just some data on under procurement, there it says that the number of new locomotives to be procured was declined from 88 to 70, just to get clarity as to whether that is what was planned, they would procure 88, because then it goes on to say that the budget increased from 3.5 billion to 4.8 billion. Was that on the basis that they had planned to procure 88 and they failed and procured less? Then the other one is on the issue of the audit committee. You see a whole list of issues that were raised. And if they were raised by the audit committee, I would have a problem with it. Because the audit committee is supposed to say to you, these are the problems we are seeing, but as an internal auditor, this is what we are doing. Because my understanding is that the work of the audit committee is that they must identify these things, deal with them, so that by the time the auditor general comes in, they have dealt with it. They must give a report, not for them to also moan and complain, to say that these things are not happening. And the other thing, I think Honorable Law has spoken to this issue of deduction for funeral cover. I've never actually heard of a child having to pay funeral cover, even if they don't fall under a social grant. So I don't understand why they would want to do that. And then lastly, Chair, the issue of the SABC, where it says under performance information, contents were raised about around predetermined objectives. What is wrong with the predetermined objectives? That's what I'm saying. Is it because they're not measurable? Is it because the common problem that we have is that sometimes they set a predetermined objective, but when it comes to implementation, they don't implement and they implement something else. So I would just like to get some clarity with regard to that, whether it is the implementation or whatever it is that is a problem there. I will end it, but just a whole lot of things that I think are to defend.
Thank you, Chair. Whilst we are doing this, some quick investigation, and the BNP seems to have a new director from 2016. So we don't know now who the other directors and things and how they got this contract for 250 million. Anyway, I just wanted some explanation on the Audit Committee members, which Musa, that when he said that they were not all directors, I'm a little bit confused about it. I really don't know what we mean on. But here, I think what's very important here, what we're picking up and identifying is there are serious challenges. And because there's no consequences, nothing much is, these guys are going on and on. Number one, I think in this committee, maybe we need to get the media to come in more often, number one. Number two, maybe we need to name and shame these repeated offenders so that we can get them out of our system for good. Because otherwise, you know, all the good work that is being done is overridden by the fact that we are not performing. This is the deception out there. So people that are hiding who are not performing, maybe we expose them in a committee of like this, of departments, specifically in certain areas. And that is, I mean, going to the grassroots of finding who the cause are. Maybe that will start getting people to wake up and see they maybe get exposed and they're maybe start performing a little bit. That's the thing. I don't know if our colleagues can give us the latest, because, Madam Chair, when you were not here, we went and paid a visit to Prasa. Of course, when you go there, believe me, besides the beautiful breakfast they gave us and we couldn't eat, they will tell you everything hunky-dory, everything is perfect and fine. We were actually getting to visit the factory where these locomotives were going to be assembled and things would be good. The fact they hadn't even started, but we were ready to actually board the buses to go there when we were told, no, not going there, because there's only land. Now, I don't know what is happening in terms of those locomotives coming and what time was that happening. But the problem is, I think that is We didn't have any follow-up information on that to see exactly what has gone on from the time they gave us the deadline that they were going to perform to the time which is. So I think that is one of our challenges. I wonder if our colleagues can just, I don't know anything about this, I didn't know it existed, I must be honest, for my ignorance.
the sheltered employment, how does it actually work in terms of these disabled staff in the textile or leather industry? Whether they pay directly to companies as an incentive in employing them, whatever it is, how police can just give us some insight, if they can, if it's within their mandate.
No, I'm sorry, my friend. I want the respect to assist us on this funeral scheme for the cancer of grass, because one has never met grass. Only the pensioner that we know that there is a funeral scheme. I'm saying this because I do have information. The issue of the child support grant has never had a funeral scheme, you know. Maybe if they can unpack to us whether are they talking about the pension, because also there is a concern around the funeral of the pensioner. You know, when they get older, I think even 2000, that's the concern that I made the query on. You know, they were complaining when we were having death. But on the child support grant, I don't think it's something national, maybe certainly somewhere, because where we come from, child support grant, they get 350 as it is. There is no funeral scheme for it. If they can explain to us whether they really mean the child support grant, or they mean just the social grant, you know, because it's for this element of the pension.
Okay. I'm sure you know that's my question.
I happen to be based in Somerville. The South African Institute of Health and Welfare has a document called the Guide to Retention of Health. So I happened to put that on the first page, the one I have emailed us. So that you look into FOE, there is a requirement by the PSMA and the Company Act that there must be pension of record for a period of 15 years or 10 years on the ledger. So I am asking Chairperson that we ask the inspectors and the PDO to go and look on the records of this institution for 10 years, at least 10 years, and give us that information. So imagine a lot of money has gone into people's bank accounts.
Okay, your
I'll look for the other one at home. I actually have to. I'll give it to the chef when you make copy for the number.
But actually, you can give them.
If you go to ATEC now, they'll give you.
I'm talking about
the. That is correct weapon. In this conference, when you go there, just as a unique code for all your members, you get it. They always get it.
That
I think maybe it will help if the PSMA that members will get, it will be the thicker one with the treasury regulation,
yeah.
Because it has, not the one without the treasury regulation.
Yeah.
So I think that will help. And then in terms of the question that
directed to this presentation, Honorable Sheikh Ima, on the issue. Okay, all right. Yeah, I think everyone you can bring there. No, thank you, Chairperson. Just to the point, the first question around the number of locomotives that was revised downwards to 70 from 88. Yes, Honorable Sabonyana, the number of 88 is like, that's what the annual report is saying, and it was revised to 70 locomotives. But what is interesting is that the budget has dropped from 2.5 to 4.5. So that's the concern that we're raising. The rest of the year, how come the band whose figure has declined, but the budget is gone up? What was not done in the first place when the prediction was made? Because clearly something was not done when the 88 prediction was made. Maybe the exchange rate and so forth and so forth. There are a lot of issues. So the visibility, we find that it was not very collected to get things right. That is one. Two, the issue around predetermined objectives. There is a combination of issues around predetermined objectives. You find that there is what you call a smart principle that your predetermined objective needs to comply with. Now, the wide range of those principles, the AG will comment and say 67% of these objectives is not reliable, is not measurable, is not achievable. But if you want us to look into a specific entity or department, we can actually do that, and we can give it to you. But we are really with the reflect that it's a general fact that is not... the issue around the shared employment, it's an entity that forms part of Program 4, when I was setting up, of the Department of Labor. It's the Department of Labor. And it actually facilitates the employment of people with disabilities. Those people are employed by various specialists that produce textile products and woods and stuff like that. So it actually seeks to bridge the gap between the people that are employed as able people and also people with disabilities. But we find that under normal circumstances, people with disabilities are not given that attention in terms of employment. So those are the things that achieve. But in terms of saying, does its own factories or factories belong somewhere else? We are quite not certain about that. But all we know is that its money is facilitating the employment. Yeah. But we don't check for you on the inequities around. Right. That is the latest information around CASA. We have not had any latest information after the oversight visit that the committee did, except what we picked up in the report. And one of the issues was that the Treasury is also raising some concerns around the funding of the rail modernization program. And therefore, they are saying they are no longer supporting that program in terms of funding and so forth. So that's one of the issues that also the committee is going to pick up with the CASA and so on. But I know also that there are quite a number of mitigations around this very problem. That's the latest that we have got. And the issue around the funding scheme, Chair, we have double checked this with the portfolio company researcher as well to say how true is this, because the Act does allow, the Social Assistance Act does allow for 10% to be gathered for funeral purposes and whatever arrangement that needs to be made. We have double checked with the portfolio researcher, and if you compare with this notion. However, we can go back again and verify if really it's child support grant, yeah. Because then our consent, if that is the case, is that it tempers with the beneficiation of the child. It also tempers with the ability of the child to enjoy that money. Yeah. So we can actually look at that and come up with very clear a message to Honorable thank you very much. I think we... Yeah. Most of
the recommendations that you made, I think we don't have to wait for that. We can write the CASA and hope that the CASA did. We're not prepared there. report to them. We then ask them to give us a progress report with regard to recommendations that they made in writing. We don't have to wait for them. This is a campaign. But thank you so much. It was a very interesting engagement. And I can see also, you know, we still want more time. We have so much time. Now let's look at the time. I know we have position at 1. But that's fine. Shall we defer the minutes to the next meeting?
Yes.
Okay. But I don't want us to say this one because remember the work is in there. I would like the researcher, we made a previous meeting, we said, okay, after the presentation, we should then come up with a short text that will be released in this financial.
Want them to put as number one SOE and from the master list.
Thanks, Catherine. I think I'll agree with you. This will not be a presentation, as I said. It should be fairly short because this has been exhausted. The president gave us a very clear presentation. And then what we can say, what we did here, we're trying to be systematic because what we realized that the departments that were identified by National Treasury who did not perform well in the fourth quarter of 2015-16 and first quarter of 2016-17, most of them were covered by our presentation. But we said, not all of them are affected or performed badly, the ones that we identified. Not all of them performed badly in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. So we wanted to select those that can be invited for the fourth quarter and the third quarter. So there is the list of those departments, the issues that presented by National Treasury. So the first one, as we said, it was affected in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, it's the Department of Basic Education members will remember the issue of ASIDI. It was an issue in the fourth quarter of 2015-16, also in the first quarter of 2017, the issues of the annual national assessment. There was an understanding because not all schools complied with this program. There were issues of the food and so on and so forth. And then the other one was the Department of Health. That one also was, there was a big problem, the issue of procurement of condoms, many other issues, and also the issue for Treasury, also recommended that this department, they must try and coordinate the planning, you know, they must improve on the planning and coordination around infrastructure projects, you know. And that also affects the issues of NHI, the NHI grants, and so on and so forth. So we said this department is also a critical department, but it understands in those two quarters, and then the government will have an opportunity to discuss the issue that is raised by National Treasury. And it will be preferable that National Treasury is around so that they can elaborate to the department what they mean when they say they need to improve planning and coordination. There are many other issues, but I will just try and be short. And the other one, it was public works. I think here we'll have an opportunity to discuss issues related to DTI, IDT, yes, because it's reported under this department, but there were also other issues. It was the issue of vacant positions,
you know, but it was one of those departments that I understand, and then it was National Treasury. National Treasury was mainly the issue of understanding during the first quarter. We don't know what happened in the first quarter, the issue of the job fund. Yes, the over-explanation in the first quarter. But we said that issue of the job fund and then other conditional grants that are administered by National Treasury. We know there are few conditional grants. We want to know what is the progress that is going to pass on the contract and the policy around that. And then the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Service, this one, the issue of broadband, the issue of litigation around the FCD technology, set-top boxes, you know, and the issue, I think it's an opportunity to understand the issue of the post out of this department. So we can just have an inquiry from the department before we even get it, to discuss the matter with the entity itself. And then the last department is the Department of Water and Sanitation. Maybe quickly, just to add, we should recall that the Revenue Bill, Act, 2015 made some changes around the asset funding. Where now the money will be transferred to provinces, provided those provinces are able to demonstrate that they have capacity to implement it. And so we need also to check the follow-up on that, to check how many provinces have actually received that money and what is their performance as far as the eradication of mass schools. I know that some provinces don't have mass schools anymore, but the issue there is the water, the block, the electricity, the block, and sanitation, which forms part of the overall program within the education. So that's the issue that we are raising. With health care, the grant that is not performing is quite problematic, the NSI grant. Remember that NSI grant has been split into three or four grants, direct and indirect grants. So those grants have not been performing, contributing quite a bigger chunk of life into the department. But also the fact that the pilot study of the NSI has been going on for quite some time. We need to get probably some sort of an update. Yeah, this is how far away, and are we ready? Because the fear is that the more you prolong your pilot, you create a permanent status on the ground, and therefore it will be difficult for you to actually move back in the case of the pilot. And this is the reality in our implementation. So we need that to be also brought into to an end. It's quite a list of amounts that have been underpinned on the department, so we would not list them. Each DTI, telecommunications and social services, my colleague has alluded to the issue of the set-top box, the digital migration. If we were to meet the 22 deadline of moving from analog to digital, the set-top box project is very key. And the entity that runs out this USASA, so if there are non-transfers to USASA, and USASA is not, because USASA is not submitting the performance, financial performance of the structure of financial year, then it's a problem, because that hampers with your deadline going forward. So we might likely to see the 2020 deadline not being met if we still have those things. The issue of coastal office as well can be discussed in that respect with the Department of Public Works. What was clear is that an expenditure on public works might have been issued, but also the other issue that we have to have was that the public agency of the public works, the PMTE, is still relying on the public works system to actually pay its staff. So the entity is not fully fledged established in terms of ensuring that it has its own personnel. Now, that makes it difficult for the department to be held accountable, because then it says, no, this was spent on the PMTE, and it is not us. Now, you ought to have the entity responsible for this, and the department, so that you are able to draw a clear distinction of accountability of the resources thereof. That was our concern. So, the billing system, Musa has alluded to, what I said is the reason, Honorable Shopee Tole, I made the proposal around municipalities as well as provinces, because they transfer a chunk of money to the municipalities for the water delivery and so forth, and also to produce. And so we also have the eradication as a system. We know that the eradication as a system is a thorny issue in the region. So if we understand them on that particular problem, then we are having a serious problem. Dynamism of working positions and the delays in the finalization of rural water phase, business master planning term contract is also a problem. But we also know that water affairs has got one of the issues that we identified in our last meeting with the department was the fact that it suffers from the lack of critical skills that are required to maintain your water reservoirs, your plants, your water purification plants, and so forth and so forth. So the work there is very technical, and therefore if you don't have that skill, then you ought to experience these delays in terms of spending. But then the other issue side of the coin is the fact that it overall number of employees mainly is dominated by people who just, you know, who are officials that do not possess that skill. So you have a huge number of people in the structure that you are paying, but do not necessarily impact positively on the deliverables on the ground if they don't have the technical skills. So they only write reports, they only book transport, do the logistics work, and so forth and so forth. Deliverables on the ground. There is a vacuum. The other issue was the realignment, again, Chair, that we need to discuss. The realignment between the planning in the water affairs itself, the service and the policies. When the water affairs plan and deliver the policy infrastructure, by which of its mandate, it has to deliver policy infrastructure in whom we use policies, then the localization of that process has to be done by the water affairs authorities, which is municipalities. Then you find often than not that municipalities have got a budget to actually take water from a dam or from a water reservoir to the locals. That's why then you see an infrastructure being delivered. But you can't see the water care because there's that void between the planning of municipality and the water affairs. I remember in that committee, the former Minister of Water Affairs even went as far as signing a memorandum of agreement with the two premiers of the provinces, Limpopo and Mpumalanga, where he assured them that she would find mind for them to actually implement a local infrastructure delivered for water. Because that has been the problem. Because he was asking a simple question, why would I deliver infrastructure by infrastructure and not assist the people on the ground? Just because there's no money, the countries have no plan for it. So we need to find ways of financing that. So that's the problem. That is also linked to the O&M, we call it O&M budget of municipalities, operationalization and maintenance budget. Once that structure has been handed over to municipalities, the municipalities don't have capacity and money to actually operationalize that particular infrastructure. That's why then you end up having a wide-effect, beautiful state-of-the-art infrastructure that's been built on the ground. Thank you very much, Chair.
Well, Honourable Member, thank you so much. I am so satisfied. I'm going to go anywhere. This is what the students are hoping we must do with them. Thank you. I think we need to move from here and then take this and act. All right? So as we close, Honourable Member, please, in this I can see the 8 meeting on the SO. And we have really seen that it can turn over to a free up for our oversight team. It is clear that generally they are still operational and leadership challenges to the SOE, which manages the work in non-compliant with the PSLA and trade regulation, so that it challenges the financial sustainability. These challenges affect infrastructure delivery and the promotion of economic growth and will consequently impact negatively on the attainment of the national development strategy. This highlights the need for the committee to invest upon county officers and accounting authorities, the importance of consistent management for contravention of the PSLA and federal regulations. We need to also strengthen our oversight role over the SOE by including them when we engage with the National Department on quarterly expenditure to track whether SOEs are addressing matters raised by the auditors.
this to cap the ongoing trend of transgression of procurement regulations, irregular and fruitless and risky expenditure. As highlighted by the M16 budget review, state-owned companies need to generate sufficient incentives to contribute strategically to development without ruining national resources. Our intervention will therefore assist in this regard as we check whether key control systems and process systems are in place for the SOEs to improve their strategic role. The researchers have also indicated to us the department if the committee should invite to account on the first quarter for 2016-16 financial year and the first quarter for 2016-17. The committee secretary has updated the program to include departments which shall be invited during this term and this will be circulated to the members based on today's presentation and the sentiment expressed by the committee member. We will analyze the list of SOEs invited and this will be communicated accordingly. This year, I really would like to thank all of you for your invaluable contribution. Thank you so much, and I'm looking
forward to
receiving the
Thank you, Chairperson. I just like your summary, and I would like it to be emailed to all staff.
I also would like to
Thank you.